weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Thanks to Lottie and David. It's Tuesday the 11th of June and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, it's only days to kick off, so stay tuned for our big Euro 2024 preview with Mark Langdon, Keith Tracy and Alan Cawley. Plus, we'll look ahead to Ireland's friendly in Portugal tonight.
And we'll be live to Rome to speak to David Gillick after another 24 hours to remember for Irish athletics. Plus in golf, Rory McIlroy is ready for his US Open charge, while Padraig Harrington enters the World Golf Hall of Fame.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. Time for the Euros. Everyone excited? Alan Cawley, Keith Tracy in studio.
Evening Marie, evening Ruby. I'm very excited, yeah. I love a major tournament.
I know, nothing else to do. Just sit around, watch football all day.
The major tournaments
element.
Are brilliant, yeah.
Couple of games a day suit Alan Cawley down to the ground, doesn't it?
Well, I'm doing it all year round, so it's even better when I can do it for...
You have it. I'd say you have the technique perfected now, Al.
Well, for the major tournaments, I have to say I do love it, yeah. Gets me into a bit of trouble, but I'm kind of... They've gone past giving out to me now at this stage. I'm just so used to it.
Keith...
So, I have a free run. My wife will be in school most mornings, so I'll get the first game, maybe the second game in. And yeah, I've a little room down the back of the house, the little man cave I can go and go and get me head into and watch them all. So I'm delighted, but I know we'll get into it in a little while, but I'm still fearful that the English are going to do very, very well here. I know they'll meet France in the semi-final, so hopefully that will be their undoing, but still fearful that they'll do very, very well.
Yeah, I don't think you're on your own with that one. We'll get into it in just a moment, but a word up, Al, now on the Ireland under-21s draw with England just this afternoon.
Yeah, 2-2, late penalty. Oco Flexi actually missed that and scored the rebound, but Joe Hodge just scored, with Joe Hodge, who captained the team today, promising young player. Everybody's kind of expecting that he may be the next one to break through from the 21s, but it just keeps the momentum going, because obviously these camps, I find, and no more than the senior teams as well, this time of year, players after doing a long season, I think the last thing they want to be doing now is to be obviously going off for a 10-day camp or a 2-week camp. It's different if you're preparing for the Euros, but for the likes of our lads, I'd say they just want to get the season over and done with now and enjoy their summer break. Everybody needs a break, Marie, at some point, and then get back into it. But certainly from the under 21's perspective, it just keeps that momentum going. They've been going very well. They're still very much in the fight for obviously qualification as well. When the season restarts, the big games coming up in September. So good result.
Keith, we couldn't see it anywhere. We're just all following it.
Yeah, I was on the way here, but it's a brilliant result for the Irish team, and it's one of those. I think I only ever keep a loose eye on the underage stuff, but it seems like they're going in the right direction, and we've a couple of lads popping into the senior team, then popping back down, and that's where you want them to be, coming up, getting a bit of experience, but not being a mainstay in the senior team and popping back down. So everything bodes well. Looks like we're getting stronger at underage level.
There was nothing on that GAA goal today. You think they would have showed it, wouldn't you?
I checked that. I thought it was on the FEI YouTube channel.
They were trying to get the two games that Ireland had shown, but there was some issues. They didn't have the rights to them. So I think
the one earlier in the week
out.
Was that on? No,
they weren't able to show it.
Because I saw it advertised somewhere that it would be on.
They tried, I think, but just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Imagine the FEI would have the rights to their own games, wouldn't you?
Not when it's...
I would have thought, and especially
away,
it's only a friendly game as well. Like.
There you are now. TV's big business.
Yeah, even their own, as you said, YouTube channel, but didn't work out. Anyway, speaking of big business, let's move on to the Euros. Mark Langdon is with us as well. Mark, you put together a fantastic Euro 24 preview in the Racing Post. I'd say that took a lot of work.
Not from me. I'm sort of manage the team, so
I'm
always the one that ends up with all the... I get all of the credit, but it's really that there's a lot of... Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of work that goes into it from a lot of people. But I won't wear the three-piece suit or the cardigans. But I think the Euros and sort of European football was a labour of love of mine anyway, so it works well. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the tournament. I think because... Like the last couple of World Cups have not been in sort of what you call great sort of football places, you know, Qatar and Russia. Then you had the COVID hit Euros that was not, I think, the best anyway, because it was all around Europe and you didn't have one destination for fans. You've now got a Euros in a proper football country. You know, it's easy to get to, it's easy to get around, it's fairly cheap, you know, for people that can only do kind of day trips or sort of 2 day trips. So I think it's going to be, you know, a really sort of fantastic sort of proper tournament like we've maybe not had for a while.
I may as well tell everybody now, I'm going on my holidays there.
I know what you are.
So I'll get it out there now, going to...
I was at the last one in 2006.
Amazing, yeah.
In the World Cup in Germany, and like Mark said, it's a brilliant place for football. We were at Ivory Coast in Argentina, I think it was, in Hamburg, and unbelievable atmosphere. But in terms of the transport system, mm-hmm. getting round, all that, it's so well run.
I'm going to the two round of 16 games for Group E and Group F, so flying into Frankfurt, one game in Frankfurt, then train to Munich, and then flying out of Munich. So, as you said, Mark, it's so accessible. So that's Belgium's group and Portugal's group. So looking forward to that.
Very good.
So now we have Marie's summer holidays all sorted. Yep. Let's start with the soccer. Mark, you might as well start with you. You're English, you're in England. Have we to listen to footballs coming home now for the next month?
I think the kind of mood in the last couple of weeks has started to become one of nervousness. I think there was a real confidence a couple of months ago, and the injury to Harry Maguire, which is quite strange because Maguire was for so often kind of the, you know, he was having to put up with all kinds of criticism, but I think people are actually sort of looking around and are slightly nervous about who actually comes in to replace him, because for all the criticism, he's done well for England and is that physical threat that they maybe don't have. Luke Shaw, we're taking his fitness on trust, you know, barely played in the last few months. Big question marks over who sort of sits alongside Declan Rice in the midfield. The defeat to Iceland kind of didn't improve the confidence of the nation. And even someone like Jude Bellingham, who's had a fantastic season for Real Madrid, he did most of his best work, I would say, in the first kind of half of the season compared to the second half of the campaign. Now people are saying, well, when was the last time Foden had a good game for England? And, you know, so that this is pretty normal, I would say, for people to suddenly get nervous about this time. But I think England have got a good chance. I'm not sure I would rate them as the absolute favourites, but they're in a nice group. They've got some absolutely fantastic players. It's just whether the balance of the team is right, and that defence, when it comes up against a real top team, will they be able to cope? That would be my big question mark for them.
Al, I know you're a huge fan of Foden, so do you think then that it should be him and Bellingham centrally together? Is that the way you'd go with them?
It's interesting to see, I suppose, in terms of the dynamics of the team, because the dilemma for all us watching in is, will he go with the four? Well, he will go with four at the back, but will he go with two sitting players with a defensive kind of mind, or will he go with just one and play with the five attackers to try and get as many of the brilliant talent that he has in the team? And as you say, Foden, Bellingham, obviously two of the main ones. He'll definitely go Rice, we know that. It's whether he'll go someone alongside Rice like a Maynou or a Conor Gallagher, or will he go with Bellingham, as you say, and play the attack minded one. I think in maybe a couple of the group games he may do that, but if you come up against the likes of Spain, Italy, Germany, Portugal, France, I can't see him being as open as that and playing one of those inexperienced lads. And also, I don't think they're the best in the world at what to do as well in terms of that defensive axis, if you like, in front of the back four, and give them enough protection. So I'd be worried about England defensively. If Southgate is brave, and everybody's asking him to be brave, and it almost feels like it is his last tournament and he should just go out and have a go, I think they have a great chance because of the attacking players that they have. But funny enough, actually, the result last week against Iceland, I think, has helped him, because people were getting far too carried away with themselves.
They've settled now.
Yeah, and they've been brought down a notch, and it's only a friendly game. I wouldn't read too much into in terms of the result and losing, but just more so just that it dampens down expectations a little bit. So I think they have a great chance, but I'd be very, very worried about them defensively.
Keith, whatever the public or the press are looking for, does Gareth Southgate have it in himself to be attack-minded?
I'm not too sure, Ruby. I think if you ask Gareth Southgate, he will say that he played with two holding midfielders against Iceland, and they let Conor Gallagher off the leash a bit. He went and joined in the attack, and Iceland are a good solid team. They very rarely get turned over or take an absolute trouncing, but they play through the English press with absolute ease at times. And I know it's only a friendly, you can't read too much into it, though. You go and set up like that against a France, a Spain, a Portugal, a Germany, they will hurt you time and time again. And the most worrying thing for me is it wasn't a smash and grab from Iceland. They had better opportunities, they kept the ball well at times, and like I say, they looked really, really dangerous. And I would echo what Mark Landon is saying. I think Shaw hasn't played since February. Kieran Trippier will probably end up playing left back, and for me, you need a natural left footer out there. If Saka, Foden, whoever it's going to be on that left wing, Trippier's going to cut off that side of the pitch because he's naturally going to want to come inside. John Stones, is he really going to be robust enough to play every single game or the bulk of the games? I'm not too sure. And Mark Gahey, brilliant player, done excellent at Crystal Palace this season, but he's an international novice and you're throwing him right in at the deep end. And I would echo as well that Bellingham was brilliant the first day of half of the season. Second half, not quite as good. And Foden doesn't seem to be the player he was for England. So although I'm very, very worried with the talent the English have, I can quickly talk myself out of it when you think of some of the defensive problems that England have.
What about the rest of their group then, Mark? Denmark, Slovenia, Serbia. I read in the Racing Post this morning someone was making a case for Serbia to get out of that group. Who are England's biggest opponents?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be easy enough in the group. Just to quickly go to the midfield, there's big rumours that Trent Alexander-Arnold could be the one that actually partners Rice in midfield. In terms of the biggest rivals, I think I would say it's Denmark, and they're not the same side that reached the semi-finals 3 years ago. You've got Højlund up front, Eriksen in midfield, a few decent centre-halves. Kjær plays for Milan. Anderson at Crystal Palace would be another one that people would sort of recognise, but not a side I think that would overly concern England. They've definitely gone backwards in the last few years. They went out very early at the World Cup. Serbia, I think, always catch the eye because of their attacking players. You know, you've got Milinkovic-Savic, who's now in Saudi Arabia, but used to play for Lazio and scored a lot of goals from midfield. Dusan Tadic, still a creative force, and then up front you've got Vlahovic and Mitrovic. So there's a lot of goals in the team, but nobody ever mentions how bad they are defensively, and that the talent is all at one end of the pitch, and that would sort of concern me. I think you're better off kind of not having those star players and just having more balance to your team. And then in terms of Slovenia, they've got a recognisable goalkeeper in Oblak, and also up front the kind of new sort of hype machines in overdrive for Benjamin Sesko, who plays in Germany for Leipzig. Some people are calling him the new Erling Haaland. He's had a breakthrough season. So they've got a goalkeeper and a forward. They might surprise some people. I wouldn't be amazed personally if they got out of the group, but I wouldn't have thought that these three teams would cause England too many problems.
I'm really looking forward to Group A: Germany, Scotland, Hungary and Switzerland. Let's start with Germany, Alan. We know that they have brilliant individual footballers, their club scene is flying it, but they haven't been able to function as a team in quite some time. Do you think that this is a tournament where they'll be able to get everything to work in the right direction?
I think they have a couple of big things in their favour, obviously most notably being the host nation and the crowd behind them, which I think will be a big factor. Nagelsmann coming in as manager as well, obviously very, very good manager. They have a brilliant goalkeeper. I think the spine of the team is very good in terms of Rudiger, Schlotterbeck at centre half. I think they're outstanding, the two of them. I think they're as two of the best that you'll get around. We've obviously seen a lot of Schlotterbeck with Borussia Dortmund, and we all know Rudiger. Midfield and forward would be a little bit of a concern for me. Marie, obviously Toni Kroos is coming near the end, unbelievable player, really, really like him, as you know, but this is going to be his last tournament. Does he have the legs to carry himself through that tournament? Now, he's a very clever player, so he'll be able to just obviously let the others around him, if you like, do the running for him. Musiala, really exciting player, exciting talent, as is Florian Wirtz as well. We saw him in the Europa League final here. Didn't have a great game in the Europa League final, but he's a real talent. Sané as well. Pavlovic, another young player, but I think he's going to miss the game against Scotland, Pavlovic. But there's young legs and energy there, if you like, to complement Kroos and Gundogan. And then up front, that's another... I know we spoke, obviously, as Dortmund got to the final, and Fulkrug had a really good season and popped up, nearly scored in the final as well. Big, awkward, robust centre-forward, but I think he causes problems and he'll cause plenty of teams problems in the Euros. Havertz as well is coming off a great season, obviously, with Arsenal. And the question is, will he play through the middle, or will we see him more as an attacking midfielder, like maybe what we saw with Arsenal? They played him through the middle as a centre-forward a lot, but with Fulkrug there, I don't think he will. I think they'll go with Fulkrug. So they've plenty of talent, Marie. They have plenty of, as I say, advantages in terms of the home nation. I think the last 10 competitions or Euros, the home nation has got to at least the semi-final as well. So, as I said, that's a big advantage, and they have Nagelsmann. Can they win it? I don't know. There wouldn't be my fancy, to be honest with you, but I think, like Germans in all the tournaments, they're always there or thereabouts.
They most certainly are. There's only six groups, two teams to qualify, but obviously four third place teams will get out as well to get to the last 16. Could Scotland do enough in Group A to get themselves to the last 16?
Yeah, possibly, Ruby. From what I've seen, they can punch above their weight in qualifying. They were excellent. Look, the Swiss are a very decent team. Hungary are decent. We seen them live in the Aviva last week. They weren't as good as you'd expect them to be as they come into the Euros. But yeah, I think Scotland can throw a few punches. Look, it's going to be very difficult on Friday night against the Germans, being the host nation. But they can afford to lose that game and then really throw everything into the Switzerland and Hungary game. And yeah, I think they could have it. Look, I don't think it's dead in the water. There's certain groups you're looking there and you think, like, especially the Albania group with Croatia, Italy and Spain, you're thinking there's no way Albania are getting out of that. But I give Scotland half a chance. Yeah, I think they might be able to do
it. I actually think that's one of the hardest groups.
Yeah.
It's very competitive. When you look at the likes of Portugal and the group that they have, Belgium as well, an easier one, Slovakia, Romania, Ukraine. I think that one with Germany, Scotland, Hungary, Switzerland is really, really competitive.
Mark, mathematically, what kind of a number are you looking at getting now? Would 4 points get Scotland into the last 16?
4 points would almost certainly be enough. I never want to say definitely will, because you can never say never in football. 4 points would be the target. Usually, 3 points and a decent goal difference around about zero or maybe even minus one is I suppose par for qualification. So from sort of Scotland's point of view, if they can win and draw one of those games, and if we sort of write off the Germany game for now, then that would be enough. Otherwise, don't get thrashed by Germany, win one of them two games, and then, you know, don't get sort of heavily beaten in the other one, and it might be enough. I suppose the question mark for Scotland is, have they got the goal scorers to win any of those three games? That would be my doubt, I think.
Group B is looking like a group of death as well. Spain, Croatia, Italy and Albania, tough teams in there. Do Spain have enough to win the Euros, do you think, Mark?
I'm not sure. I mean, they won the Nations League, and I think there's certain aspects of their game that's really quite exciting. You look at Rodri holding the midfield. Pedri has come back from his injury. If he plays like he did at the last Euros, when he was just incredible and really had that breakthrough season, you've started to get some sort of bits there, haven't you, of what could be a winning team. You know, you've got sort of Williams on the wing, plays for Athletic Bilbao. I think somebody that's really exciting on both wings. They've got about three or four players you could choose from. We're going to say it's about so many teams, but is Morata going to win you a European Championship or World Cup? That I would say no. So that's my that. I think if Spain win it, they'll almost certainly have to go for at least one penalty shootout, because in the last World Cup, you know, they dominated against Morocco, didn't score, and then went out on penalties. And at some stage, I just see them not scoring the goals. You can have a look around sort of the big teams, Mbappe with France, Kane with England, you know, Ronaldo probably for Portugal. And you can go, yeah, I can see where they're going to score the goals. If you're asking for Morata to do it, I would have my doubts. I mean, he's only scored, is it about three or four goals this calendar year? So he's very hot and cold, and he's sort of cold too often for my liking.
Keith, Italy didn't go to the World Cup in 2022. They had a disappointing qualifying campaign. They were well behind the UK. You kind of always consider Italy to be one of those big teams, but are they?
Yeah, I think this is an Italy team in transition at the minute. They've got some outstanding talents, but in terms of a team, I still think they're a little bit all over the place. And a lot of people have said to me, they think this is England's best chance to go and win the Euros. And I always go back to when England played Italy in Wembley, and I was thinking that was England's best chance to go and win the Euros. And the Italy team that turned England over on the day, it's not the strongest Italy team, you know, we've seen in history. And again, there's some decent players in there. They can go and hurt you, but I do think they're very pedestrian at time. I think the recovery speed is not what it needs to be. And they're a nice, pretty team. I don't think anybody particularly fears playing this Italian team. I think they're just a little bit nice. They play nice football. They'll try and get in behind you. I'm a big fan of Jorginho since he's gone to Arsenal. His little angles he makes to keep the ball are brilliant. Chiesa on the wing, outstanding player. But I just don't fear them, and I don't think a lot of the elite teams in Europe do fear this Italian team anymore.
What about Croatia, Alan, when you look at what they've achieved over the last 6 years or so? They finished runners-up at the 2018 World Cup in Russia, third in Qatar 4 years later. They got the final of the Nations League, lost to Spain on penalties. Are they in with a chance?
Phenomenal achievements, Marie, especially a nation with obviously a similar population to ourselves. It's unbelievable, punching above their weight when you basically outline exactly what they've achieved in recent seasons. But they're just getting a bit old now, Marie, unfortunately, and I can't see them. I think even the odds for them to win this is 33-1, so that'll tell you a story in itself. The bookmaker is never too far wrong. In a really tough group, Spain obviously the favourites maybe to come out of that group. I would agree with a lot of what Keith said about Italy, very much in transition. It's a tough group, it's competitive, it'd be hard to call. Obviously Albania will be the whipping boys in that group, and it's tough to call then between the other three, but I can't see Croatia winning. It'd be great to see Modric at another major tournament, obviously phenomenal player as we know, still doing little bits with Real Madrid here and there, and I think he's going to stay on for another year. But in terms of them winning the tournament or maybe even achieving anything like what you said, getting to a semi-final or third, I can't see it this year, Marie.
Okay, we've looked at Group C. So Group D, France and the Netherlands, two strong soccer nations, Austria and Poland with Lewandowski and Zielinski. But it should be France and the Netherlands to get out of there, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I would have thought so. On paper, I'd definitely say France would be absolutely fine. But I was looking at the Netherlands last night against Iceland, and maybe I'm giving Iceland a bit too much credit for the way they played against England, but the Netherlands looked really, really good last night. Defensively, they're on a different planet with Van Dijk. Mickey van de Ven had to come off the bench. When you've got players like that, you know you're in a good place. And Memphis Depay always seems to turn up for the Dutch, and Gakpo and Weghorst as well coming on. And it's pretty similar to how I feel about Spain with Morata. I just look at Holland and I think defensively brilliant in the midfield, great players, they can keep the ball. I think Cuit Meinders is out, which will be a big blow to the Dutch. But I just think up the top of the pitch with Depay, Gakpo, Weghorst, Xavi Simons scored his first ever international goal yesterday. I just don't think they have the goals to go and win the tournament. I think they can get to the quarters, maybe even the semis, but in terms of being able to blow teams away or teams that are really well structured and, you know, are going to frustrate you, I think this Dutch team can be beaten, and it's just because of the strength up front. And again, fairly similar to Spain for me, just don't have enough firepower. And look, Austria I think will throw a couple of punches in that group. I don't think they'll get turned over too easy, but I expect the French and the Dutch to be okay. Austria to finish third, and Poland I believe without Lewandowski as well is going to be a massive uphill task for them.
We're ruling out teams here now like there's no tomorrow. We're getting through the wall.
I'm trying to figure out who's going to win it. Obviously Austria don't have David Alba either, so that's France started in Group D. Group B, Mark Langdon, Belgium, the Ukraine would have lots of spirit. Romania struggled to score goals. Slovakia, can't see them in it, but Belgium, surely they're getting too old.
I think they probably are. In certain part, we're ruling out another one here. I mean, Jan Vertonghen still plays centre-half. Courtois, unavailable. Real Madrid didn't want him to be risked after his injury. Look, they've got De Bruyne, they've got Lukaku, and then they've got quality on the wings in Trossard and Doku. So even in midfield, you've got Tielemans and Onana, who plays for Everton. So I think they have got sort of some aspects of quite an exciting team. It's just whether it all comes together, and I think defensively they're not going to be good enough to win the tournament. I mean, we sort of did gloss over France there. I mean, I think they are a genuine threat and could probably be the favourites with all the talent they've got. In terms of sort of dark horses, I think Ukraine are kind of going to become the official dark horses. You've got Lunin in goal that have played so well for Real Madrid this season. Dovbiak up front was the La Liga golden boot winner for Girona. A lot of quality in midfield as well. Zinchenko, much better, I think, in midfield than what he is when he plays as that sort of makeshift left back. They did reasonably well in qualifying, drew with Italy and drew with England. You mentioned kind of a lot of goodwill towards them. I think, you know, as a nation, that they're all pulling together, and, you know, that they're sort of that unity will be important. I think it is important at international tournaments. And I think that they've just got a good side. I mean, they're going to need sort of the real big guns to not turn up if they're to win it. But if you have a look at recent European Championships, it's a tournament that throws up surprises in terms of semi-finalists all over. You know, maybe not winning it, you have to go back to Greece for a big shock there, but there's been a lot of teams that have not been fancied that have reached the latter stages. It might be Ukraine's turn to sort of reach a quarterfinal or something like that.
Mark, in Group F, Portugal are much fancied in your preview. They're the team that you tipped.
Yeah, I mean, I think Portugal have got a very good chance. You know, just strength all over the pitch. Costa in goal, plays for Porto. You've got Dalot, who's had a great season for Man United. Cancelo at Barcelona. Ruben Dias, who plays for Man City. Palinha in midfield. I mean, how he's at Fulham, I don't know. He could play for sort of any of the big clubs. He's so good in that midfield. You've got Bernardo Silva and Bruno Fernandes. Diogo Jota, Cristiano Ronaldo, Rafael Leao. I think they've got a lot of what you need to win a major tournament. Two question marks, really. One is Roberto Martinez good enough as a coach? The second one, and probably more important, is Cristiano Ronaldo. Can he still deliver at 39? And if he can't, will he kind of accept not having such a big role, or will he, you know, do what he can do and sort of, you know, demand the ball, demand to play and cause problems for the team? Hope that doesn't happen, because I think talent-wise, they're right up there with anybody else at the Euros.
Two of my fancies actually come in Group E and Group F. On the Belgium one, Marie, I would actually fancy Lukaku as the top goal scorer, because he's a bit of a flat track bully. Mm-hmm. And I think in that group, they'll score goals, because the teams that they're up against, I don't think are any great shakes at all. So you could have a case where he could get two or three in the group, carry himself through to a quarter final, and four could win it, five could win it, and he's good value for that as well. But I would agree totally with Mark, Portugal are my fancy. The players that they have, the squad, I think, is absolutely frightening. I think Ronaldo will accept it at this stage. Like, surely he's grown up at this stage of 39.
We'll see him now in action later.
Yeah, I think he will accept it. But even if you look at the other forward players, João Felix, Rafael Leão, in my opinion, I've seen him two or three times live, Marie. I think this fella has all the attributes to be one of the best in the world, but just goes through the motions, he looks like, when he plays. But the talent is absolutely frightening that he has. Even if you look at Vitinha midfield as well, he was unbelievable for PSG in the Champions League this year. Whether he'll even get in, because you have Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, Palinha as the defensive one, Pedro Neto, who I think is an absolute star at Wolves as well. So I think Portugal have an unbelievable chance. Just depends on them defensively a little bit, maybe. Good goalkeeper, even backup goalkeepers, Rui Patricio, very good as well. So they would be my fancy, Portugal, to win the tournament.
Keith?
Yeah, I think Ronaldo has to start. I think when you look at the qualification goals he scored, he scored 10 Euro qualification goals. Fernandes is the next one with 6, and Cancelo with 3 behind him. So I think if you bench him, you're getting a knock on the door from a 39-year-old. And if you turn around you turn around and say you're not playing because your age, he's going to point to Pepe and say, well, he's 41, so don't play him either. So you're sort of backing yourself into a corner there. But look,
the only thing on that one, Keith, and I think Mark raised it and I would agree with him as well, Martinez is a major question mark for me. When he had the golden generation at Belgium, never delivered. I was always unsure of even Premier League level, and now he's after inheriting an unbelievable job and squad at Portugal. He would be the only question mark for me.
Yeah, I think this Portuguese team can be frustrated. I think if you sit in a low block and don't give them any space in behind, and you get in and rat about them and rattle them around, they can get annoyed, because I think that even they look at the players, the individuals they have on the pitch, and think we should be blowing teams away. And if you stick with them for a long time and frustrate them, they can lose their head and stick the bottom lip out a little bit.
Right, lads, next on the line, Mark Langdon, who will win it, and give us a dark one.
I'm going to go for Portugal to win it, and Ukraine are going to be my dark horse.
Alan, we know you're going for Portugal to win it, but give us one outsider there to...
I think the Netherlands might get a good run at it, and my outside one would be Lukaku, top goal scorer.
Lukaku, top goal scorer. That will be a shock. Keith Tracy?
To be honest with you, Ruby, I can't see past France, but I will say the Dutch or Germany as some sort of dark horses, because I don't see anybody beating France, but if somehow that does happen, if they have an unlucky day, maybe the Dutch or, God forbid, maybe even the English.
Ooh, you can't be saying that anymore. Anyway, guys, thanks a million for that brief and in-depth preview. We have a quick break to take, but we will be back with a look ahead to Ireland's game against Portugal tonight.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Keith and Alan have stuck around. We're still talking about who's going to win the Euros, and Portugal is coming to the top of the list. We're going to see them tonight, Alan, but we did see England against Iceland only a few days ago, and it was a terrible England performance. What are we going to see from Portugal?
I'd be fearful for Ireland tonight, Marie, especially after the players we just listed out there in the preview. As I said at the start, even in terms of when you asked me about the 21s, it's a hard camp, and I find the only reason, I suppose, there's a bit of motivation around with the Irish players, I feel at the moment, is because John O'Shea is kind of implementing that because he wants the job himself. So there's probably no let up really in the training or the approach, because I know obviously he wants the job and had a good result last week against Hungary, and he'll want to finish off with a positive result tonight as well. Portugal, on the other hand, are obviously gearing up for the Euros, so you would like to think they would be going in with one eye on obviously the tournament and also one eye on the fact that they don't want to get injured or anything like that. So it can be tricky games, I find, but just in terms of the talent that Portugal have, it's frightening. It really is. Like when I was going through it earlier as well, even just the squad of players to have, it's unbelievable. So I would be a little bit fearful. I know John O'Shea would love a positive result to finish off his little role and his campaign and the end of the season good, but I would be fearful for them tonight.
Keith?
Yeah, look, if Portugal torn up and they're the Portugal that they can be, then I would be fairly fearful myself. And with them getting a little slap on the wrist against Croatia on Saturday, losing 2-1, I don't think they were too happy. And when you look at it, like, we've listed off the players so many times. Bernardo Silva is, I'm a big, big fan of his. He's a little magician on the wing. Paulini in the middle, as Mark said, could probably play for any of the top teams in the world, but finds himself at Fulham. So if they click and they go about it in the right way, I could be fearful. But look, at saying that, Hungary are a very decent outfit as well, and the way we pressed against Hungary gave me a little bit of hope. I thought we were more pragmatic, we were more realistic in the way we wanted to play. When Brady and Coleman in particular got squeezed, we just flicked the ball up to Adam Eder. There was a lot of fighting balls, and the goal that Adam Eder actually scores, for me, it's a beautiful goal. Smallbone just swivels on it, whips it into the 6-yard box, and Eder throws his head on it. I think you go back 18 months ago, we don't cross that ball, we recycle it, we keep it, we try and hurt them a different way. It's a lot more simplistic, and John has used that word today in the paper that I've been using for the last 3 months. It has to get horrible. It's just the way we have to be. And people are saying to me, are we going to throw Tom Cannon on? Are we going to make changes? That's not where this Irish team is. We have to stop handing out caps like Skittles. We need to put a proper shape on this team. We need to get our proper starting 11 in. And look, if somebody does well at club level, you rotate them, like Troy Parrott doing really well, scored the winner against Hungary, maybe he gets a start. But I think we need to have in our minds now what our best 11 is, and that's going to be it moving forward, because this rotating, moving around and letting lads in and out when they play one or two good games at club level, there has to be a higher bar for me. And I do think John is moving in the right direction, and for me, I think he's out there to get the job. I know the FEI are dragging their feet one way or the other, but I've seen enough improvement in the three games he's played to be going with John.
I think most people have. Alan, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I said it months ago, Ruby, it would have cut out all the messing as well. Obviously, somebody who cares deeply about Irish football, had a brilliant career, certainly looks the part on the line as well. He's assembled a good backroom team behind him. And as Keith said, we've seen improvement in the three or four games. And even going into tonight, even though I'm saying I'm a bit fearful, I'm not expecting us to get kind of turned over and get hammered by any stretch. I think we'll have a decent shape about us, be pragmatic and realistic, which is what we want. One player I would like to see tonight would be Jacob Ryan start. I think obviously I was disappointed that he didn't start at the weekend. I think as much as we need to nail down fellas, as Keith said, and get a bit of continuity in the team selection, I still think he's the future, and he's probably the present as well, never mind the future, when you look at maybe where Duffy's at in his career. So I'd like to see him get a start. But certainly in terms of the managerial job, and I've said it along the last few months, Ruby, just to cut out the mess, and it's been a shambolic process. John O'Shea is fully capable. I actually thought it was an insult to ask him come back a second time. Fair enough, he stood in for the first couple of games, but to ask him come back for a second time for a man of his stature and calibre in the career he's had was a total insult in my view. But he done it because he wants the job, and I would give him the job.
So would I. Queevin Kelleher, Seamus Coleman, Darrow O'Shea, Josh Cullen, Will Smallbone, Adam Eda, Robbie Brady, Liam Scales, Troy Parrott, Sammy Schmodick and Jake O'Brien are the starting 11 tonight, Alan Colley.
Very good. I'm glad to see that.
He was listening to you. He heard you all the way from Portugal.
Well, I rang him earlier.
And Troy Parrott and Liam Scales also coming into the side as well from the last.
Yeah, look, I've highlighted the way we pressed against Hungary. It was really good. We went hunting as a team. But one thing that should be also highlighted is we scored two goals. And, you know, other than Gibraltar over the last month or so, or the last couple of months, we failed to score more than one goal in a game. So, attacking-wise, we look like we have a little bit more of a threat. Every time Sammy Smodics plays for Ireland, I know it's only a handful of times so far, but I'm loving what I'm seeing. He seems sharper than the rest of the boys. I know Adam Eade is doing really well at Celtic, but when the ball comes into Smodics, he's flicking it around the corner, one touch, he's getting on his bike. He just looks like he's had a really good season. The amount of goals he scored in the Championship, his confidence is sky high, and I'm falling in love with him. And when you think Smodics, Ferguson and Ogbeni to come back into that front team, it gives you that little bit of hope for the future.
Well, lads, I think you can go and watch it. It's time we took a break. We'll be back with David Gillick from Rome.
Game on 2FM.
Now, I'm delighted to say that David Gillick joins us all the way from Rome. David, how are you? What is it, day five? Day four?
Yeah, I'm losing count now. Day five.
Brilliant. And all going well, obviously. Some brilliant performances. And we're going to get on to the women's 4x4 in just a few minutes. But first, David, we have to talk about Rashida Adeleke last night and her performance. A magnificent run, a record for her, and a silver medal. I know she probably wanted the gold, but still, what she did was pretty special.
Oh, look, it was a fantastic performance. And, you know, I think you got to put it in context because they both, Natalia Kaczmarek, who pipped her on the line, you know, and Rashida, they were both the 15th and the 17th fastest times ever over 400 metres. Like, incredible times. Rashida's time of 49.07 would have won previous Olympics and world gold medals. It's that good. And it just, unfortunately for her, happened that she came up against a very talented Polish athlete in Kaczmarek. But for Rashida, I think, like, there's so many positives to take away from last night. You know, she's an underage superstar and winning a load of European medals and doing really, really well. And that transition into the senior ranks, it brings a lot of pressure and there's a lot of expectation on her shoulders. So I think for her to go out and put in that performance and get a senior medal, it just almost kind of can take that element of pressure away from her now and she can really get stuck into the season. And I think, like, she executed her race really well. Probably would have liked to maybe have a little bit more distance on Kaczmarek coming into the home straight because Kaczmarek always finishes really, really strong. But, you know, take nothing away from Rashida. That's her second 400 of the season, okay? And it takes a few races to get into the groove. So if you're doing that off two races, it just shows what sort of shape and capability she's in for later on in the summer.
David, when she got up this morning, what way would she be looking at last night's race? Will she be thinking, I needed to go a bit quicker earlier, I needed to see out the last 50 metres a bit stronger? What will she, you can see it in her face, she wasn't content when she crossed the line. So what will she be thinking regards improvement?
Yeah, look, you're spot on. I think, you know, being in the stadium, that's what I was looking for, her initial reaction when she crossed the line, because, you know, it's a silver medal, it's a fast time, it's a national record, it's all of those things. But Rashida's a winner and Rashida is so competitive. She wanted that gold medal. And I think, you know, in the interview I spoke to her and she was a little bit like, initially, oh, I didn't win the gold. But, you know, in that short kind of couple of minutes post-race, she was able to reflect and go, okay, it's great. I'm delighted it's a silver medal. But I think when she goes away, and like you said, when she woke up this morning, she will review the race and she will talk to her coach Flo over in the States, and they'll have that kind of, okay, well, what could I have done, and, you know, what are my areas for development, etc., in that race. And I think there's probably little things, maybe holding it a little bit together in the home straight. You know, if you were to go head to head with Kaczmarek, she's really efficient, really fluid and great technique in the last 50. You know, Rashida was working hard, and again, you'd expect that. So again, there's little things you can kind of work on and go, okay, well, how do I improve my next race? But again, you have to remember it's so early, and both Rashida and Natalia Kaczmarek, like, their main focus for the year is Paris. You know, Kaczmarek won a silver in the World Champs last year, so she's at that level. So when you're trying to plan your season, you know, the better and the more races you run, the more efficient, the more you kind of join up the dots. So I think, you know, for this stage of the season, an awful lot of positives, but there's always little things. Okay, what can I do? What should I have done? Arguably, maybe coming off the bend into the home straight, because that's a really key part of 400 metre running is, you know, that's where you roll off the bend, you're trying to stay nice and tall and keep your stride length nice and long into the home straight, because everybody's tying up, everybody's slowing down. It's just who can hold it together the best all the way to that line.
Let's hear from Rashida now. You spoke to her after her race last night.
Rashida, congratulations. It's a European silver medal. It's your first in the senior ranks. You got to be happy with that.
Honestly, do you know what? When I crossed the line and I realised I came second, I was a bit devastated. I really wanted it, but as my coach said, we've been training through this competition. So to even come out here on a PB, 49.0, I'm really excited for this. This is my first 400 metre competition of the year as well, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's only your second 400. You come out, it's a massive PB, a national record. It just shows what you're capable of, but also what shape you're in for the season ahead.
Yeah, like as I said, my coach has been turning us through this whole competition. He said Paris is the goal, so whatever we can do here, we'll do. But we've been training through it, going to continue training really hard for the next couple of weeks. And hopefully by the time for Paris, I'll be where I need to be.
Talk me through the race there. I have to say my heart skipped a beat in the blocks. I thought maybe you twitched a bit and I was like, oh God, did it affect you or what happened?
I kind of like had a mental pause for a sec. I was like, keep going, like you're grand, keep going. So yeah, God save me on that one.
Well, you put yourself in the mix, of course. Was that the plan to get it? Obviously, Kaczmarek, you know her, she's a good athlete. But what was going through your head around that like top end? Because that's where you really got to put it in the 400.
Honestly, I kind of just tried to stick with the pace, you know. I wanted to make sure I was always in contention. I never let them get too far ahead. I know around 200, there was a bigger gap than I liked, so I started to move, maybe a bit too early. Maybe I should have waited a little bit. But as I said, this is my first 400 competition back, and I'm going to be learning each time.
Absolutely, and I just have to say that the home straight was obviously a massive fight. You know, again, what was going through your head?
I was like, don't die, please don't. I was like, legs, please don't give up on me. And it was just at the end. Maybe, you know, that's what comes to my third round of the competition. The first, mixed relay that I felt, the mixed relay, I think going out that fast and kind of battling to the end, I felt it the next day, and then I had the heat. My legs were a bit heavy, so I'm really, really happy. I'm really blessed to give all grace to God, my friends, my family, my support team, Alex, and all the fans are in the crowd. Cheer me on, everybody, because I want the gold, I got silver, I can't complain.
So David, hearing her there, you can tell that she's disappointed, yet, as you said, she's reflected a little bit. She's understood now the fantastic achievement. But just as you said yourself, like, her focus now is on the summer, it's on Paris, and her preparation, everything that she was doing really was with Paris in mind. Does that make her run last night even more impressive?
It does. To be honest, that's the way I look at it. I think, and she alluded to, like, she didn't taper down her training. It was like, look, the goal is Paris, so we're going to train through the Europeans and use that as a stepping stone. And I think in any other year, you've got one major championship. This year, we've got two. And I think she's negotiated that very well. And I think when you look at it from, you know, a long-term view and with Paris in mind, it's coming off, like coming off your second race and running these fast times, it just shows that everything's in the right direction. Like, and she probably will come away from Rome and maybe kind of down tools for a couple of days and then get back into it. You have to allow the body to recover from the highs and everything that's been going on over here. But I think in terms of, you know, the long-term plan, I think they're in a really, really good position going forward.
It most certainly looks that way, and everyone is looking forward to the Olympics in Paris. But David, what about this morning? The women's 4x400 metre relay, Laura Cadden, Phil Healy, Sophie Becker, Charlene Mosley was out again after running last night. Is there any end to Charlene Mosley's energy?
I know, I had to ask her, like, do you ever take a rest day? You know, phenomenal, like, athlete, and what she's doing over here is just incredible. I think that was her fourth race in 5 days, and, you know, her last leg this morning, a 49.7 split, like, again, it's incredible. And that's after, you know, a European final last night. So again, you think about recovery, you think about sleep, you think about trying to get to sleep with the adrenaline, everything that goes with, you know, the magnitude of a major championship final is incredible. But I think, you know, you've got to factor in that, you know, there's a squad in that relay. There's about six athletes all kind of vying for places in there. Rashida didn't run this morning, but they went out and they ran their second fastest time ever as a quartet. You know, like, just very shy off the national record without Rashida. So, you know, to win the semi-final, like, it's fantastic, because I'm giggling to myself, because we're going into like the final day here and we've another opportunity not only to get a medal but to win a European gold medal in that relay. And I think, you know, we're kind of trying to get final kind of confirmation, but Rashida will probably come into that team and then she gives you so much more, you know, in terms of time. So it'll probably come down to maybe Ireland versus the Dutch all over again tomorrow night. And, you know, with the vibe that's going through the team, and, you know, you mentioned Phil Healy and Sophie Becker there, and they want a piece of the action. They want to get on that podium. They want a medal around their neck as well. So it's an exciting way to finish these championships, which have just been like enormous for Irish athletics. And hopefully we can go out and high.
Just a curious one, sorry Marie, from my point of view for a second. So tomorrow night, if they do run in the final, is there four gold medals, or do those that partake in the semi-final get a medal too, or are they just thank you very much for your effort?
No, you're absolutely right, and it's a really good question. So with the 4x4 relay, you have a panel of six, and you can make two changes between a heat and a final. So arguably, like, if, let's say, for example, Rashida does come into the team, it's probably Cadden that will step out. So Cadden will get a medal. You know, it's not just literally a pat on the back.
Oh,
well,
that's
done.
All right.
You will get a medal, yeah.
You spoke to the four women earlier today, Dave, starting with Sophie Becker. Let's get their reaction.
3:24.8. We're all a bit like dumbfounded by it. We're like, what? Because obviously this is like Charlene's fourth race. She's meant to be off today. Like, we're supposed to have Kelly here with us, but unfortunately she picked up a little niggle. So that's unbelievable. I'm so proud of us.
The main aim today was qualification. We secured that, and it's all to play for tomorrow.
Yeah, 51-2 split. So you're smiling.
Yeah, definitely. That's my fastest relay split ever. So I'm very happy with that. And look, it takes the team to perform together and each have our own job and come together, and to be so close to the national record. We obviously have Rashida yet to come in. That's so, so promising. And obviously a credit to Charlene stepping out for her fourth race in such a short time frame. And as Sophie said, we unfortunately lost Kelly this morning, so hopefully we'll have her back in the squad very soon as well.
Yeah, no, I was happy. Look, I knew I had to get out hard. I am definitely a good chaser, so I said I'd go past the Italian girl on the bend. Probably should have kicked for home a little bit sooner. I think that was probably a mix of nerves and stuff, but once I saw Charlene's hand, it kind of brought me home. Look, I'm happy. It's my second time running with girls. Obviously, being so close to national record is amazing. So, yeah, on to tomorrow now.
Well, Charlene, you just don't take a day off, do you?
Yeah, today I stepped back up with the girls. It was meant to be my rest day, but as the girl said, we lost Kelly this morning. But that's what happens in relays. You have to just roll with it. And yeah, I just got into the warm-up. I did come out to try to do a very relaxed leg today, and I think that's what I did. I thought that in the top three would be the aim, and yeah, just the line opened on the inside and I said I feel pretty good, so I just went with it. And yeah, we made it through as the fastest qualifiers.
A relaxed leg, what do you think you ran?
No idea.
Well, I'll tell you, it was a 49.7 split.
So David, that was Charlene Mosley there finishing the interview. How many 400s does she have at peak in her?
It's a really good question, and every athlete is quite different. From my experience, when I kind of approached the season with a major championship, I was kind of looking for something around maybe 11 to 12 before a championship, and that worked for me. But like I think Charlene is just one of these people that she loves the battle, she loves getting amongst it. And I think with the way she produces run after run, and again, you got to remember to last year as well, she had a great series at World Championships, running really fast splits, and obviously a load of races as well. So this is probably one of the kind of question marks over tomorrow, is like, where does fatigue fit into all of this? And, you know, by the end of a championship, you're after running a load of races, and that includes warming up, cooling down, you know, the whole emotional side of it as well. there has to be an element of fatigue somewhere, and I hope it's not tomorrow, but it's the same for an awful lot of athletes. And that's the thing, when you go into a final, you know, the Dutch, you're going to have Lieke Klaver, you're going to have Femke Bol, they've all got races in their legs. So it goes back to who can hold it together the best. And I think, to be honest with you, like Charlene this morning, she was cool going down the back straight, relaxed, and she even said herself, like, you know, I just tried to stay relaxed, and she comes away with a 49.7 split. So I think that's the mindset to go in. Don't get too tense, don't over worry about the fatigue, and just try and let it happen. I think hopefully we'll be okay.
And just finally, very quickly, David, with two Irish athletes in action this evening, Anika Thompson and Laura Mooney in the 10,000 meter final, how will they go?
Yeah, look, it's a tough ask. I think the 10K is a stacked event, and for both athletes, it's a great opportunity. You know, I think, you know, when you come into a championship like this, a 10K, it's a long way and plenty of laps around that track. But I think, you know, if they can get amongst it themselves and just kind of watch their pace earlier on, not get too carried away. Conditions are difficult for like an endurance race. I got to admit, like it's very, very humid, and that is definitely something that we've seen a lot of athletes kind of struggle with here. So again, it's kind of just keeping the pace on check in the early part and just try and get amongst it, and even kind of attach yourself to people and get pulled around a little bit as well. So hopefully, you know, they'll do credit to themselves, which I'm sure they will, and I think that will be successful for both.
Okay, David Gillick, thank you so much for joining us from Rome.
Yeah, when you think, Marie, that 568,000 people tuned in last night to watch Radisha Adelecki, what a number that is. And I wonder how many will tune in tomorrow night to watch the 4x4 100 metres women's relay final. Could be another huge crowd, just how popular that is.
We're all on the bandwagon. Probably a few more than will be tuning in to watch Ronaldo play tonight. Is he starting, Keith?
He is starting, yeah. It's a fairly strong Portuguese team. It's probably not as strong as they could go with one or two of the bigger boys on the bench, but it looks like they're going to play a back five of Dalo Silva, the 41-year-old Pepe, Inácio, Cancelo left-back, Bruno Fernandes, Neves, Liao, and it looks like Ronaldo and João Félix up front. So a 5-3-2 formation, and very strong from Portugal.
I'm influenced anyway. I'm Portugal for the Euros win. Ruby, who are you going for?
Who am I going for? I'm going to go for Turkey to get along with.
All right. Okay. We'll talk to you about that.
Strange things happen in Euros.
Big time.
Greece, Denmark. Strange things happen at the Euros.
Well, we're going to be doing loads of coverage on this programme, so do tune in throughout the Euros. We'll have all our regular pundits looking back on the games that are on during the day and looking to the evening ones as well. Can't wait for it. That's all we have time for this evening. We didn't actually get to our golf because we spent so much time talking about the football, but we're going to have a big US Open preview on tomorrow's show. We'll also be doing some more build-up to the Euros, and we will have our usual ladies football and camogie chats as well. Thank you for coming in, Keith. Ruby, thank you very much.
Cheers,
as well,
mate.
And Betty De Silva is up next.